This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
The time has gone 9 minutes past the hour of 11 o'clock. And we are just now waiting in anticipation for the President of the Republic of South Africa to arrive. You know, yesterday there was some banter online and people were like, so I don't know, is he still the president? Does he become a new president? What is all of this? Is he the president-elect? Well, the way we were made to understand it yesterday is that he is still the president of the Sixth Republic of South Africa. And after he's sworn in by the Chief Justice, he becomes the president of the Seventh Republic. Had he not been elected by Parliament last week, Friday, let's just say for argument's sake, somebody else won that election, then today, President Cyril Ramaphosa would be arriving as the president of South Africa to hand over to the new president of the Seventh Republic. But because he's re-elected, he's handing over to himself. But he has to be sworn in so that the work of the Seventh Administration legally, constitutionally can begin. And that's why the process was preceded by Parliament and the swearing in of parliamentarians, so that those parliamentarians could then, as the first order of business, appoint a speaker, deputy speaker, and president. And then within 5 days of that parliamentary election, by law, an inauguration must take place so that officially this administration can get on with the business of governing the country. And I think there are also some precepts as to how long he has before he needs to appoint a cabinet. And although it can take a couple of days, ideally it should be within the first 24 hours. And that's why there's been, ideally, I'm not saying by law, it should be within the first 24 hours. But they do say that other presidents in the past have taken a day or two. But it can't be a process that's prolonged because constitutionally it would trigger a problem. It would trigger a non-constituent government. So now, with this inauguration, you now have all three pillars of state constituted. You have the executive, which has the number one citizen. You have the parliament. And obviously the judiciary is intact. And so what the executive needs to do now is he will need to appoint ministers. The one thing, though, is that all ministers, as of 12 o'clock today or whenever the president does his swearing in, at that moment, they cease to be ministers. So I know Bekitele, you know, was addressing an audience of the police yesterday, awarding them for commendations and stuff. And he said, I'm still the minister. People should not say I'm not the minister. I cease to be the minister tomorrow, meaning today. And that's true. The minute President Ramaphosa puts his hand on the Bible and swears an oath, everything that we know about his sixth administration is officially closed. This is why I said Dr. Naledi Pandor, she is the program director as the Minister of International Relations. But at the end of this program, she will no longer be that minister. She would have to be reappointed. Dr. Chris Landsberg, good morning.
Yeah, what an introduction, eh? Good morning.
Thank you for your time. You're a researcher and analyst at UJ. I have not spoken to you in years and years. I was excited to see your name on our showrunner today.
Yeah, I was wondering whether you sort of blocked me, but, you know.
No.
I'm now reassured that somebody must have given you my number, so I'm so glad to that person.
I haven't seen you. You know, yesterday, I'm going to tell you, as they were running through names of analysts, I said, hang on. Where's Kolelo Mang? Where's Chris Landsberg? Where are these giants of intellectual thought in South Africa? And they're like, oh, yes. That's how that happened.
Yeah. Look, I must say to you that, of course, I'm told by many of my friends that Ibrahim Fakir and I must take part of the responsibility for the consternation that's happening in the country, because as you know, about 3 weeks before the election, without the benefit of having the results or knowing the results, we of course wrote the piece as to why a GNU would be the best solution for South Africa. Now everybody's been referring to a coalition, a grand coalition, at the GNU. So guilty as charged, but we never claimed that there would be a government of national unity, and it will pan out that way. We just made the case for why it is the best solution out of our malaise. And let me just say on this point, a government of national unity is created in crisis, in moments of emergency in a crisis, not just war or so on. And as for those who said, you know, there is no crisis, and they said we can't compare to 94. I say, okay, so let me just understand. There's no energy crisis. There's no poverty crisis. Yeah. There's no inequality crisis. Yeah. There's no jobs crisis. Yeah. And so the list goes on and on. Is that what people are saying?
Okay.
This country sits on the brink of a social and a socioeconomic explosion, and this GNU, or what is now a grand coalition, according to us, should have no illusion about the work in front of them. And egos should now be set aside.
Okay, so now that you've gone to the nub of the issue, there's two things I'd like you to do. Clarify the definition. So the ANC, as the party with the largest proportion of votes, argues that it is a government of national unity. Not quite along the same principles as 1994, because there they'd won an outright majority, so they were being magnanimous. Now they actually need some kind of a coalition to push their numbers up from 40% to 50+1. But they're insisting it is a national unity government and not a coalition. Why? What's the technicality in these terms?
Okay, so I mean, I even wonder whether 1994 was a GNU, but where I'm prepared to concede that it was a GNU is that the interim constitution of 1993, remember we adopted the final constitution in 1996, but we had an interim constitution to take us to the election and to guide us to the period when a final constitution was adopted in October 1996. That constitution actually spelled out the modalities of a GNU precisely because, as you say, the administration of President Nelson Mandela, surprise, surprise, given the roles that the father of the nation played, they were magnanimous, right? So it was called the Government of National Unity because there were made provisions for what a government of national unity would look like. Justice Dennis Davis is the only member of the judiciary, and if I haven't heard others, I apologize, but he's the only member of the judiciary that I saw doing an interview, not on his show, on his television show, but literally an interview where he said, but we judiciary, who always is seen as untouchable and we have the final say and, you know, we are always right, apparently. He said, now we must confess that we made a serious blunder by not spelling out in the permanent constitution principles for a government of national unity or coalition governments in future in the event it should happen. So maybe we also bought into this idea that Jesus, or the ANC will rule until Jesus comes. But you know, Jesus has a tendency of not announcing when Jesus will arrive. You know, Jesus arrives any time. And I'm not trying to sort of make light of this. That's part of the problem. There is no principles. And what now serves as the principles is this contentious document, the statement of intent. There are now principles for a government of unity spelled out in that.
All right. So there's some kind of a historical precedent. The reasons may differ 30 years later, but there is a context. Now, let's talk about that context because you spelt it out. Usually a GNU is constituted in an environment of crises, and South Africa has many crises. There is a jobs crisis, there's an energy crisis, there's a crime problem, there's a disaffected youth, and the government of the day does not seem to have a handle on these issues. So if they've run out of ideas, they're going to have to bring in other members of society who have ideas, maybe even better ideas, but it's going to have to happen through an electoral process, and this is what's happened.
Okay, first of all, I do take your point that the ANC must get used to the criticism by some that this is also an attempt to get over the 57%, yeah, sorry, 51% mark, or to save it from almost a state of shock and being on life support and trying to resuscitate a ruling party that was so proud, but that made so many mistakes, yeah, and are now paying a dear price. I think they should take the criticism. I don't think it's driven by that, but I understand the criticism, right? But to come to your point, and I just want to reinforce your point, I'm looking at the screens as you and I are talking, I'm sure you're doing the same. Mm. And many of these African states and their leaders that are putting up at the Union buildings right now, because I've been traveling the continent and I've been re-traveling it again after taking a break for a while. Malawi doesn't have an energy crisis and this thing called load shedding. Mm. Botswana doesn't have. In fact, Malawi, Botswana, and Zambia have surpluses of energy that they now have to sell and are willing to sell to the so-called giant of the continent. Mm. Tanzania doesn't have. Ghana doesn't have. And Egypt doesn't have. And I'm just mentioning those because I've visited them in the last 8 months or so. Mm. I've visited these countries. And I'm just shocked to see the levels of development in these countries. Mm. And we have certainly gone backwards.
Regressed.
There is a serious crisis. Ibrahim Fakir and I start that article by saying South Africa doesn't have a crisis of democracy. And here we're seeing democracy playing out in front of our very eyes again. Mm. We don't have a crisis of democracy, but we have a crisis of democratic governance. Mm. How we are governed, how those with power uses the power either for self-gain to the detriment, absolute disastrous detriment of society and for themselves. That's what we hear.
Okay, I'm really intrigued by this terminology. And as you say it, one of the godfathers of the African Union project has just pulled up, former State President Thabo Mbeki with his wife Mezanele Mbeki. And about 10 minutes ago, the other godfather of that project, Olusegun Obasanjo, arrived. And I wonder what they think of what South Africa and Africa have become.
I have an idea, but I can tell you now, there's going to be a round of applause when he walks in. There's going to be a round of applause. I have my TV off because I'm speaking to you.
Yeah.
And I can tell you why. He is recognized as the father of the day. There you go. There you go. Right? There's the hand clapping. Now, let me tell you how poignant your question is, right, that you've just asked. Let's go beyond the applause and the father and the high priest of the African Renaissance.
Yeah.
This speaks to this government of national unity that forms. And there's one party in particular that I would like to really speak to directly and said, DA, get over the fact that South Africa's relations is only relations with the West. This country has moved on in 30 years.
Yeah.
This country is part of Africa. It is in Africa. It is not just located in Africa, it is off Africa. In fact, it is African. Mm-hmm. The fact that we have relations with the South, with Latin America, is very important. But I'm also the first to say to you that the DA has a point in saying you can't just criticize the West politically, but you want their economic goods. Mm-hmm. But that does not mean that America does, and this president we're seeing right now, that 8 months of President Motlanthe was probably the most crucial,
yeah,
because he oversaw the contentious ending of the Mbeki period,
yeah,
and the transition to the Zuma period,
yeah,
right? So all of them played a critical role. But let me just finish this one point in 2 seconds. It does not mean that America doesn't have a regime change agenda for this country, and it doesn't mean that it's not using the DA to try and do it from within. So here's the question. Is everybody who's in this GNU there for bona fides, for good, noble reasons, or are they there for male fides, right? Hidden agendas.
Yeah.
and basically to backstep one another.
Okay, that's the question. Very briefly before we take a break, they all say they're in it for the national interest. And I know there's been quite a bit of wrangling in terms of, please define national interest from your point of view. And what is a consensus around that national interest? What do you say is the national interest?
Right. First of all, Ibrahim and I invoke that notion in our piece, right? Written 3 weeks before the election. I stress again. And let me give you a simple definition for the sake of our listeners of the national interest. The national interest is a consensus over which everybody agrees across the board as to what are the most vital needs of that society. And they are typically in world affairs. For every state in the world, there are typically 6-7 national interests. Let me mention 3 or 4 of the most important. The security of your country, crime, right? Security threats from within, security threats from without, right? Secondly, and listen to this one, welfare, development, the economic upliftment of your society, education. Those are national interests. Then we get to the territorial integrity of this place called South Africa. We're not going to just dish out pieces of land to other countries, even though some have legitimate claims on the geographical space of South Africa, Lesotho, for example, right? Territorial integrity. Transform the world in your own image. When I say in your own image, transform the world in a way that it serves your interests. We've gone further and said, also serve Africa's interests. So that's the national interest. In a nutshell, the national interest, this concept, constitutes the most vital needs of a society over which everybody can agree. And let me end for you on a note that might make you laugh, but it's a serious point I am making.
Yeah.
There seems to be in some constituencies, in some groups in a society, more concern for the killing of rhinos than the excruciating poverty felt by our people.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
Okay.
Is that really a national interest?
Yeah, okay. You've said an important thing here, which is the inequality gap is so huge that it even creates an ethical and a moral dilemma onto whose value and who has value in a society that is so broad. Okay, we're in conversation with Dr. Chris Landsberg, research and analyst at UJ. He is the Saatchi Chair in African Diplomacy and Foreign Policy there too. On Power 98.7. All right, with the clock just gone 11:27, we are still waiting in anticipation for the formalities, as it were, the ceremony and the swearing-in of President Ramaphosa as the president of the 7th administration to begin. I think it's almost time because what we can see is that all former presidents have arrived, Kgalema Motlanthe, Thabo Mbeki. We do know that President Zuma and the MK party have said they're not attending this event. And the vice president of South Africa has just arrived, Paul Mashatile, with his wife, which means there's only one person left to arrive, and that is the man of the moment. But as we await the pulling up of the president's car and his motorcade, we conclude our conversation with Dr. Chris Landsberg, the Saatchi Chair in African Diplomacy and Foreign Policy and the director of the Center for African Diplomacy and Leadership at the University of Johannesburg. Two things I want to raise with you, Chris Landsberg. The first one is, you know, world interest. You alluded to it earlier on when you spoke about how the Americans have a vested interest to watch this GNU and see how the DA influences an agenda, and that we need to recognize that South Africa's relations are not just with the West, but with Africa, but also with BRICS, right? And what this speaks to is multipolarity. The world and the centers of power and the centers of production and the centers of trade are shifting. And now you can have many relations with the world. And that's what South Africa's argued in its foreign policy.
Sure. And and let me just add to your excellent point that we find ourselves in an unprecedented geopolitical tension and struggle, a moment in the world. The West, the Western powers in general, America in particular, are reacting furiously to see how their hegemony, their ability to dictate to others are just waning and so on. But let's speak specifically to South Africa. They are angry. They are beyond angry. They are furious. They are livid with what we did with the ICJ. They couldn't believe it will come from us, especially after the fracas over Lady R. You know that lady? That lady in red?
That ship, yes.
Who brought a ship here. They are angry. And I can tell you now that some of the partners in that GNU are there to keep a check on this party that had the audacity to challenge America. Let me be very clear. The ANC itself must come clean or move away from this thing of, you know, where we hear rumors about who they take money from abroad and stuff and do things for preservation of the party and cut deals with all sorts of external forces. So just to be balanced, this is not just about the DA, but I wish to state it vehemently clearly that the point has yet to be made that I'm concerned about a regime change agenda under the banner of a government of national unity. Or coalition government.
We will pursue this later on once we see it in formation. A very brief answer, please. The most important thing here is going to be public administration. One, civil servants who understand that their responsibility is to South Africans of all color and creeds, to the flag, and to get the job done. How are they going to sort this thing out? Capacity building, professionalizing the civil service, just doing the things that people need done.
And I would just use another word, the reprofessionalization and the building of the state must happen. The state suffered greatly. I'm afraid that there's going to be elements of people feeling that they are being purged, and it shouldn't be like that. We can also go and upskill some people in the public service there. But you put your finger on it. But the number one priority for this president now is to put an administration and a cabinet together that can show that they are unified. And how he's going to do that, I don't know. I just want to say to you, I disagreed with you earlier. The president actually became the head of state the moment he was sworn in by parliament. Today is mere a formality. He became president last week. And from this moment on after today, he will be the only member of the executive until he starts to announce members of his executive. Okay. And he'll be the only person running the country the moment he puts that hand on the Bible.
Okay. Well, thanks for that clarification. You're the expert, not me. I can say this, though, as we rush to the news. We know he's coming now. The Chief Justice has arrived, who will officiate over this part of the proceedings. But we can see the ceremonial guard and military band in procession, which means there's one thing left to do for Cyril Matamela Ramaphosa to ride in, take his oath of office, and officially begin the work of the 7th administration. It's news time.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.